Seder. Page 73, we're learning from the Arizal Hatchia. With Rav Avinir's commentary, to try to understand Ba'omek, this is very important. I know it's taking a while. We'll get this finished up soon. Mr. Hashem, it's Torah from Rav Kook. On the top of page 73, I think those were the pages you got last. I'm pretty sure you got last week. Kasha'am Yisrael, these are the words of Rav Avinir. I don't need more. Okay, thank you. Kasha Am Yisrael Hatsoya Nichnas. When we were young and we came to Eretz Yisrael, Shodim Svus L'Achash Anoylad B'Tseisim Mitzrayim. It was just a short time since we left Mitzrayim. And we were a short time after we had been wandering in the desert. So we had that time in between Yitzias Mitzrayim and Bias Haaretz and arriving in the land. We were just with each other. We were with each other, we were with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there were some issues that took place in the Midbar. We're not making believe that there weren't. We have a Sefer B'Midbar. And there were inyanim that took place. When we're alone with each other, we sometimes have some inyanim. But it's different than what happened to us when we met up with the nations of the world. This was the first test of whether or not we could be Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael among other people. And would we succeed in that clash of cultures between us and the nations of the world? And it was and Rav Avinir writes, it's not just clash, it was very hard. We were kids that just came out from Cheder, you know, we just came from Mamet HaSinai, or some years had passed, but we were new at it. And we're learning about this in Sefer Yeshua. We're learning the Sionist of how to actually live that way. The Midbar was a different type of a Nisayon. But how to actually live that way, to live with Torah Mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, we're going to be meeting others that are completely different from us, and whether or not the Torah is going to work for us in that way, we're going to be able to use it. The same way that now, when a person is young, and the Yiddishkeit hasn't yet seeped deep into who he is, when there's something that's exciting and that's attractive from the other side, and you haven't yet integrated Yiddishkeit entirely in your being, so it's a very great challenge. It's very hard. You know, you see the chevra that come back from Eretz Yisrael. So it's the first time that they really got into Yiddishkeit, and they're all excited, and everybody's going to come back, and the boys are going to all be finishing Bavli Yerushalmi, you know, in a year, and the girls they all went shopping to get all their new clothing, and everything's going to be, you know, Kedusha, the Tahar, and so sometimes it goes, and many times it doesn't go. Many times it doesn't go, because when they return to that world that is so different, and then can you actually apply what you just picked up in Eretz Yisrael, what you picked up in yeshiva, what you picked up in seminary? Can you actually live that way while you're in seminary, while you're in yeshiva? It's not such a challenge. You're surrounded by Kedusha, and you're in that world, and it's not so hard. But when you leave the Midbar, so to speak, and you come to the reality of day-to-day life. So it's not so pashut. So that's what happened to us when we came to Eretz Yisrael. We had all of our notes from the Midbar with us, you know? You have all the notes from yeshiva and from seminary, especially the girls, like Gevaldige note takers. Guys, not so much. The girls, like, with the notes. And they, plus the guys were learning Gemara. It's not so much like B'shas Maisa. It's a matter of learning. The girls, they had all these sichas. So then, it's like, then, like, what do you do? So the girls on Central Avenue, and she, like, meets her old flame, you know? So then she takes out her notes. What are you going to do? You know? So, there's still notebooks. It hasn't yet become part of who you are. That takes a lifetime. We're trying. We try over the years to to grow. But we came out from the Midbar with all of our notes from the Shiurim and all of there were like selfies with Anani HaKovit, you know? They had like a selfie with Anani HaKovit in the back, or like yourself coming out of Yam Suf, a selfie. That would be pretty cool. A selfie coming out of Yam Suf, and like the Egyptians just like going in and drowning, and you wave, and there's like and you have a caption at the bottom. Amazing. Awesome, though, awesome.
Fire emoji.
Huh?
Fire emoji.
Fire?
Fire emoji.
Fire emoji, right. All kinds of emojis and stuff, and like Chris Yamsu from the back, and but then Lamaisa, you know, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, when you mix in again with a different midstream, so it's not those midstream are gone, those Egyptians are gone, but then they're always Egyptians, you know, until Mashiach comes, they're always Egyptians, whatever you call them, but they're always Egyptians around. They're at work, they're at school, they're at... when you're in yeshiva, it's not, but otherwise, wherever you are, so there are Egyptians. So, and even when you're... Now you could take Egypt with you in your pocket, so they're always... Used to be when you went to yeshiva, you were, like, Egypt-free, at least for, you know... But now everybody's carrying their phones, so that means that wherever they go, they have... Whoever has that, they're carrying... The Mitzrayim is in the pocket. Yeah, it's Bovril, Osha, Mitzrayim, whatever the Golis is. Paros Umodai... We're carrying the four Goliaths in your pocket nowadays. You don't have to go any place. The four Goliaths go with you. Wherever you go, now you have Yavan, all the talks about Hanukkah, it's in your pocket, mamash. Not only that, but if it cracks, you go to get it fixed, which is crazy. No? Like, it used to be that when the mitzvah that was beating you up, if somehow Moshe Rabbeinu killed him, so then you were free of the mitzvah, right? But now, when the mitzvah gets beaten up, you take him to the hospital to get fixed. That's what's going on. Your phone breaks. I said that to somebody that showed me that the phone cracked. So I said, Ashrecha, Ashrecha. What an opportunity. Just keep on telling everybody that my phone is broken. Okay, I do. I tried reaching you. My phone is broken. My phone is broken. But so it used to be that when the Bavli or the Parsi or the Yavani or the Edomi gave you a patch, so you would run away, and if somehow, somewhere, this guy got a patch back, you were happy, and you were, or if you got killed, it was noch besser. And now your phone breaks, and you give it to the person. Some people will take a day off for that day, you know. They'll enjoy that day to give it. But everywhere you go, you have the Bavli and the Pinsri, you know, the all four Goliaths with Mitzrayim. It's in your pocket, in your pocketbook, everywhere you go. So it was a big Nisayon. We came to Eretz Yisrael. And so we were doing well in the Midbar, finally. Things were going better. And we heard all the shmuz and all the sichot and all the... And we had all the tyres and we were coming out with knapsacks, all excited. And we crossed through the Yarden and we're coming to Eretz Yisrael. And then, like, there's a... You know, there's a Canaanite woman. She's a, like... You know, interesting type. I never met such a girl. Nope. And then a Jewish girl meets a Kanani. It's interesting. And at B'Shas Mais, it's very hard that your notes should work. Even though you saw all kinds of nisim and the flows and everything, it's very, very hard. It's a whole different mahalach machshav. That's what he's saying. Shalom ha'sayv ma'isav. Ma'achav etarbus ha'goyim hilcha l'ne kesam. Kesam means that we were charmed and attracted to the to the way of the nations of the world that were there. Vanohinu tzi'irim, and we were young. We were young. As a people, we were very young. Ubilti minusim, unexperienced. We were inexperienced. Meaning we didn't know how to apply all the stuff that we learned. We never had to put it into real use. We didn't really have to live that way, lamaisa, in a place that was different. And the Torah, especially Sefer Devarim, is filled with warnings. You're going to come to Eretz Yisrael, and you're going to go after foreign gods, and you're going to go after the women, and so on, and you're going to want to marry. And we said, nah, what do you mean? It can't be. It's fine. We're strong. We're 100%. But and Zaninu Achvei Eloheinecha. So Rav Kook writes, these are Rav Kook's words. Lo hayinu yecholim lamo neged hazramim hakloliyim shel ha'olam. So this happened to us in Europe as well. Much less in the Golos that we had among the Arabs. Much less. It was in different ways. That's a very, very different discussion. As you know, that from the beginning of this Torah, Rav Kook is speaking about what happened in Europe. Really, our experience being the Ashkenazi experience in Europe, much less than the Sephardim. Because the gap between Yishmael and Yisrael is much, 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 much less than between Esav and Yisrael. So it wasn't as jarring an experience. And because about Yishmaelim, there's very strong Yiras Shamayim there. They very strong Emunah in Yiras Shamayim. So it was much less of a jarring. And Sneas, v'chul. So it was less of a jarring experience. But in Europe, which is what Rav Kook is talking about, is L'hayinu yuchalim l'amay neged hazram ha'klolim shel ha'olam. We had a hard time with that culture, with the world. It's the opposite of what we were learning this morning in Kesher Shem Tov from the Baal Shem HaKadosh. And as Rav Kook has been explaining through this entire Torah, that the whole Yisoid of European life was and it is Ahava Ha'atzmis Agasa. Only Rav Kook has such sentences. Definitions. Ahava ha'atzmis, self love, gaza. Prust. I don't know what in English was the word. Coarse. Yeah. Coarse self love. Coarse self love. It's mama's dripping. If you've ever had the misfortune of being in Paris or these places, it's like oozing, dripping everywhere. Coarse self love. So Rav Avinu says, "Shekem l'umas ha'idielim ha'elokim ha'omdim yisoid ha'shatar b'Yisrael." Remember that the Jewish people's existence is based upon that Musar Eloki ha'muchlat elokus, godliness, and the whole idea of godliness, like we're learning this morning, is bitlayesh, is humility, is ayin. It's the opposite. So this terrible clash of cultures with Europe, ayin and yesh. It was terrible. Haimash oimed b'yisoid tarbusum shalagoyim zu ahava atzmis hanehanesonis. That means just self-love and to have pleasure. Just to have pleasure. That's all Western civilization is about. Self-love and indulging oneself in whatever pleasure he's able to get. Shemikoycha heimusugolim lidreis v'lermais l'chates v'lishbaros kol ha'amim achem. That need for self-indulgence, pleasure, and self-love, The Western civilization, Europe in particular, is prepared to crush, to destroy anything that's in the way of that pleasure. Anything that gets in the way of that pleasure. So Rav Kook says, "Bekasha hisalachnu im haluumim shcheinenu." So when we found ourselves among the nations, our neighbors, was kalatnu el kirbeinu es rucham hazar. We unfortunately absorbed a great amount of this strange culture, of this strange way of thinking and of life, which is mamish, the hepach, the opposite of Yisrael. The opposite of Yisrael. Asher lo hoya yochali hi mozeg bonu v'hoya v'ochreinu. We didn't know how to... It was something that we could not really integrate into ourselves. It just... V'ochreinu means it just brought the terrible Tsar's terrible downfall. So Rav Aviner explains, instead of being who we really are, a Mamlechas Kaham and a Goy Kaddish, V'yizboruch u'banu kol mishpachais, next page, 74 Ha'adama, the tachlis is that we should be the ones who are influencing the nations of the world, not that we're the ones that are swallowed up by them. That we should be the ones who are changing or influencing or are active. Instead of being passive and being affected by the world, we should be the ones who are changing the world. We were given that shlichus by Hashem Yisbarach to change the world. We were supposed to bring our light to the nations of the world. Instead of that, instead of being pilate, giving out light to the world and transforming the world, instead we were weak and we began to absorb from the world. We weren't prepared for this challenge. We weren't prepared. We weren't experienced enough also. And we weren't prepared. Therefore, even for instance, even when we came to Eretz Yisrael, in the beginning, not Europe, we came to Eretz Yisrael, and we were running the show. That was, we drove out our enemies. We drove out all the enemies from Eretz Yisrael, and we were able to establish our own government, our own kingdom. And we achieved some wealth and some status and so on. But kol elohai b'achreinu. But instead of bringing us up, it brought us down. So it was necessary to go into Golos, to be taken apart. Now, how'd that help us? We're not talking about right now, but we weren't able to use the koiches that we inherently have to be mashpia. To not only didn't we change the nations, not only did we not bring the light of ourselves to the world, but we absorbed so much of the darkness of those nations that we met when we were there. And ultimately, we picked up so many things along the way that we were not able to sustain the Malchus over there. You see by the Gzeira of Paro that it says that the... That Paro was Geyser on the Zcharim, the Bonim, the boys, Hamitanai Sam, to kill them, and not in the caves, but not the girls, right? And there are questions that are asked, like Stama, why wouldn't he just destroy everybody? Sofkal Softed. That by the girls being preserved, he certainly knew that if a Mitzri is going to be with a Jewish girl, that the child is Jewish, right? So, like, why was the Gezerah just against the boys? Why was the Gezerah just against the boys? So, Ibn Asin explains that there are two ways. There's the way that's called the way of Zohar, and there's the way that's called the way of Nekevah. Zocha means being proactive, and the keva means being passive. It's not about nice and bad, good boys, girls, so anybody that's sensitive about that, get over it. So there's a koyach in the world that's called the koyach ha-zocha, zacharis, which means the kum va'aseh, and the inyan of the nekeva, which is more passive, which is Malchus, the Zohar is Yesod, and those spheres of and the Nekev is the Inyan of Malchus and Anivus and so on, is passive, more passive. So Ibn Nosson explains that Paro was Goyzer al Ascharim means that the Yetzirah has no issue with a Jew being passive in his avodas Hashem, being in the keva. doesn't have an issue with that. The Yetzer Hara is concerned with Jews who are passionate about Yiddishkeit. It's the Inyan of the Zohar. But those who are passive about their Yiddishkeit, they'll disappear on their own. You don't have to kill them. They'll disappear on their own. The ones who are passionate, Kalaben hayayoret hashlichu, those have to be thrown into the river. Those have to be destroyed. Paro understood that. Our enemies understand that those Jews who are passionate about Yiddishkeit are a danger to them. The Zacharim, but the Nekevis are not. Meaning that a passive type of Yiddishkeit is something that the Yetzer Hara is not nervous about. It's an interesting lashon that the Gemara has in Kedushin. So peches or peites over there. The Gemara has in Kedushin such a lashon. Yiratzon, that a person should have bonim zacharim and not bonim nekevis. How do you translate that? The Yiratzon, you should have bonim zacharim, like the Svardim, they give a broch to each other, you should have banim zacharim. You ever hear them say that? No? Yeah, they said it all the time. You should have banim zacharim, you should have male sons. Okay, nowadays with all the stuff that's going on, maybe you could have a whole patch on it. But what does that mean? Male sons. Banim zacharim, not banim nekevot. They don't say that part. They just say banim zacharim, which is already insulting to the girls and the women. They get very, you know, they think about it, they get insulted. What does that mean? You should have banim zacharim. You say to the couple when they're married that they should be zarecha to have banim zacharim. Binyamin, you hear? Where's Binyamin Hekmati? You ever hear that bracha? You said banim zacharim. You ever hear that? All the time. Shabanim zacharim. Banim zacharim. So what does that mean? What does that mean when you give somebody a bracha? Huh? What does that mean when you say you should have banim zacharim? Not only are you saying they don't have any girls, although we're not sure what will happen with the world, but not only are you not saying don't have any girls, but even the banim, it says they should be heroes and they should be zacharim v'lo nekevot. That's the Gemara in Kiddush. No? What does that mean? Banim zacharim. So the Meiri says pshat in the Gemara. The Machne says the Haflah says something similar. But the Meiri says in the Gemara. The Meiri says, mamish what I was just explaining from Abnasin. The Meiri says that when there's the brach is for a child that is passionate about Yiddishkeit. Banim zicharim and not banim nekevot. You should have children that are zicharim and not nekevot. That your kid should be somebody that's an active Jew, that's excited about Yiddishkeit. And not banim nekevot. Not someone that's passive about Yiddishkeit. That's what it means. That's what the Meiri says, Pshat Negemar. Banim zicharim. Not banim nekevot. So, there's a klal in halacha that if you're busy being prolate, like with the body, the animal is prolate dam, if it's giving out blood, then it's not prolate, then it's not absorbing blood from the outside. When we came to Eretz Yisrael, or wherever we've come into Galus, those Jews who are on fire with Yiddishkeit, the banim zacharim types, so the ideal was to change the world, to influence the nations of the world. But if Jews are not going to be banim zacharim, but going to be banim nekevis, meaning that we're going to be passive about Yiddishkeit, and we're going to, because of that, because of being passive, anything that comes along that's different and that looks interesting, that looks exciting, it throws you off, it knocks you out. But then instead of changing the world and bringing Elokus to the world, then we absorb it from the darkness of the nations of the world. So, our experience after the Midbar in Golus, our experience in Eretz Yisrael after the Midbar was largely unsuccessful. Didn't work out. And we had to leave. And it's a similar what Rav Kook is describing. took place in Europe later on. Vihine, as a result of this, that's something called Eilin Shlach L'Golos. So Rav Kook says, Nitzarafnu Bekur Oini. Now we're talking about, so what would Golos do? How would that help? Sof kol sof, if we're being influenced by the nations that are while we're in Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael we're the Balabatim, like we're Choshev, right? We're running the show. And even then, it didn't work out. So like, what are you going to accomplish by sending us to Poland, you know, to Hungary, to Morocco? What does that do? Then your mom is throwing us into the he's throwing us into the mess. In Eretz Yisrael it didn't work out. When we had Beis HaMikdash and we had Malchus. So what's the plan of sending us into Golos? In Eretz Yisrael, we were the majority. We were chashuvim. We were in charge of ourselves. And even then, we were poisoned by the nations of the world, by our interaction with them. So then, achas kama v'kama, no? When we're going to be among the nations of the world, mamish, in Europe and wherever we're going to end up, achas kama v'kama, it's going to be terrible. So if Cook explains, it's a very deep Indian, and it takes some time for it to like sort of kick into our brains. Because it's hard for us to understand a little, because our experience in Golos has been very, very pleasant for the most part. Now, what if we suffer? You're suffering here in America? Something's wrong. Nothing's wrong. Not that everything's perfect, but we're not suffering in Golos like our parents or grandparents are suffering. For us, it's very hard to relate to what we're going to be learning from now, because for us, Golos is a mechai. What's hard about Golos over here? But Rav Kook says that historically, our experience in Golos was, especially in Europe, was very, very bitter. We were crushed by poverty. We weren't able to own our own land and to run our own lives, and the poverty was mamish, crushing poverty. The hatred was unbelievable. The hatred. Nitzarafnu Bekur Oni, but we became refined. It's Tarafna. We went through that fire. And poverty. Overall, in Shnois Alpayim. 2,000 years. Shlo Hoyolano Mitzad Klolus Ha'uma Esek Im Devarim Chomriyim. And for 2,000 years, physical life lost its charm. What does that mean? In other words, our physical lives, our lives were so difficult and were so bitter. The only nechama that we had was like going into shul and going home. Was, you know, making kiddush and singing zmiras. The kids don't feel that nowadays. They feel like that's a distraction, right? They feel like, oh, Shabbos. My parents told me that when they were, and this is not so long ago, we're talking about, you know, 80, 90 years ago, not my thousands of years ago. Mm-hmm. Their parents said that when they were growing up, Shabbos was like, it was the biggest yeshua in the world. And they lived in shul. The men, boys, they lived in shul. That was their favorite place on earth to be. It was an ir miklat from an otherwise dismal and difficult existence. And that wasn't even if you go to the shtetlach, like that was already a city. If you go to the shtetlach, the villages, the poverty. So what did a Jew have? You would come home, the whole week he was interacting with with his customers, spitting and cursing and misery and the things he had to be subjected to. the bizyonis and so on. And then Friday, you know, at some point, he would put his, he would tie his horse up to something and go to the mikveh. And then he put on his bekeshe and shtreimel, you know? The shtreimel was not like the shtreimlech now. If you've ever seen pictures of the old shtreimlech, it was barely off the animal. The old shtreimlech. It was almost like the animal was still there. It was like, you know, Anna Tevka, overworked, underfed. And Tevya comes home. Ay, Shabbos. Shabbos. Because the world had become such a disappointment to us. The world had become so unsuccessful for us that the place that we naturally clinged to and retreated to was Ruchnius. And in that world, we came up with Chassam Sofer and Vilna Gaon and Chofetz Chaim. You'd think that now life is so good, we'd have like 1,000 Chofetz Chaim, no? It's not going. It's not going. So, once we took our hands off of the world and we realized that the world is not what we thought it is, and the world is not giving us what we were hoping to get from it, so then we naturally returned to we went home to Ruchnius. We went home to the Bat Midrashim, the Bat Knesias, to our families, to our Kehilas, to the wealth that's waiting for us at home. So Golus, we lose, of course, many, many Jews along the way because of the attraction of the world and so on, because especially when after the Industrial Revolution and things began to modernize and there were doors that were beginning to open up for Jews, so we were losing much more Jews than when things were more bitter. Because then the world was at least making believe that Jews were welcome in some places. And in those places where Jews felt most welcome, like in Berlin, for instance, and in Munich, or in Paris, or in London, so they lost their Yiddishkeit most quickly. And those places where we were least welcome, Poland, Russia, I'm not talking about the communists, I'm talking about before the war, where we were least welcome, so Yiddishkeit was thriving. Again, not that there weren't major problems, but the major problems were when you went to the larger cities, but generally it was a very clear ratio. Gashmi is good, Ruchni is bad. Gashmi is bad, Ruchni is good. So Poland was the epicenter of our Yiddishkeit in those years. And Germany until of course during the Balitosis and during Rashi and the Balitosis. But later on, once the things began to open up for Jews, we were very, very enchanted by what Europe was offering us. And once again, we failed. So it's the Egel Azov, you know. That's it. Once again, we just started dancing around the Egel. So Rav Kook says that in Golus, overall, in Shnois Alpayim Shlohoyalonim Yitzad Klolus Uma Esikim Dvaram Chomriyim. There were 2,000 years where we really were not Isaac with physical things. I mean, of course we were Isaac. I mean, had to go to work and stuff, but the world was just not working for us. Physical existence just was not going well. So Rav Aviner explains, B'meshach Shnois HaGarlus HaRuchais, during the long years of HaGarlus, Am Yisrael Nase Ruchni Umush, we became more spiritual, and we became more connected to abstract, to the abstract, because reality was terrible. Reality is like, you know, the next pogrom. So we retreated into an abstract spiritual world. Because there you could find some menucha. In the Gemara, in Shabbos, you could find there relief from the world. Of course, everybody had to be busy with spiritual things and physical things. You had to live. And people had Yetzer Hara, isn't there? They were human beings. But the nation, the Jewish people, the Jewish people were no longer a nation. So since we were no longer a nation, we no longer had this inyan of developing an economy, an army, taking care of ourselves. So we became a people that was filled with schleppers and schnorrers. I mean, that's the truth. And we were no longer a nation, no longer a people. We were no longer independent. No longer were taking care of ourselves. We were at the mercy of others. And over time, when you live that way, you get into that welfare state mentality, you know. Mm-hmm. And Gashmius is not taken care of properly. You know, things are not taken care of properly. You have in Eretz Yisrael, you go through neighborhoods and in Golis also that are not taken care of properly. The Jews are not taken care of properly. I'm not saying. Jews are not taking care of their own neighborhoods properly, or their own homes and so on. Because over time, that the poverty and the lack of feeling of self-worth and independence, over time it has this effect of making people into... Shabrach and Amenshin, which I say. Shabrach and Amenshin, broken people. And if you're not a person that's proud, and if you're not independent, and if you're not somebody that's taking care of yourself and your wife and kids, so then it shows on the walls of your house, it shows in the kitchen, it shows in the kids' clothing, it shows in everything, it shows up in everything. That's how it is. Ha'am hipsik la'asik v'nyonam gashim ha'kshurim le'medina le'shilton. Like the Jewish people that you meet when you learn Navi, it's very different than what you meet in B'nai Brak and in our neighborhoods. It's very, very different than the Jewish people you're meeting in our neighborhoods. Yeah. Very, very different. People that were conquering and taking care and building and so on, it's very different. So during the long years of Golus, we just retreated into more of an abstract life where the focus was on Ruchnius. And therefore we produced unbelievable learning, unbelievable centers of Torah learning, and tzaddikim and tzadkanias, you know, people are wrapped, you know, ladies wrapped in 1,000 shawls saying tilim for 12 hours a day or something. It's very hard to have a woman like that when there's like online shopping, you know what I'm saying? It's very hard. It's very hard to have a booby like that, to make boobies like that now. The boobies now are coming like more, you know, like with it. They go with their daughters to the mall, you know what I'm saying? How grandmothers say, you know, the way I read about them, what my parents described to me, how their mothers lived. My mother's mother fasted every single Monday and Thursday of her life, except for Yontif. Mm-hmm. My mother's mother fasted every Monday and Thursday of her life, which my mother said that she was told from her cousin, and that she remembered hearing it when she was a kid, but she didn't understand that from the time that my grandmother was 11 years old, she fasted every Monday and Thursday of her life. It's very hard to do that. Like when you're on Central Avenue or on Pico, you know what I'm saying? I was in Los Angeles. Every second place, there's a restaurant. And everybody says, they're good. They're good restaurants. Every second place is. But Hashem, there's Stieblach and Schulz, but a lot of Fleischigs and Milchigs and fish and sushi, everything is there. How do you make boobies like that? How do you make... Like, it's one thing to fast on Monday and Thursday when all you have to look forward to is like a potato soup, you know what I'm saying? It's another thing to fast on Monday and Thursday when you got, you know, whatever. You have all that stuff. It's very hard to fast. When your cabinets are full and the refrigerator is, you can't close the refrigerator. You ever have that? You can't close the refrigerator. They never had problems like that in the old days. You can't close the refrigerator. Where am I going to put the cabinet? My daughter sent in to help my wife somebody, an organizer. My wife's a little bit unorganized. So there was an organizer, a special lady that's called an organizing lady. And she came in and she put everything in order. You think that they needed in the shtetl like an organizer? Like, who's going to put your two items into order? I go, who's going to put the salt and pepper? Right or left? And you don't need an organizer for that. We need to have organizers. The cabinets, oh, Hashem, there's no place to put anything. The refrigerators, nothing to. You have to have another refrigerator in the basement. In the garage, you have to have a freezer. No, it's not enough to hold the stuff. It's hard to make those kind of bubbies in these places, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's very hard to make grandmothers like that. Mothers like that. Very hard to make men who are wrapped in that world of Kedusha, of Ruchnius. It's very hard. Learning people like Lon Vahashem, learning is interesting. But big Avdei Hashem is very hard to make. So what happened is that in Golus, Rav Kook is saying that in Golus, we were taken away from Malchus, sovereignty, strength, success. That didn't work for us. And then we were thrown into the opposite kind of a pot of deprivation, of poverty and misery. And as a result of that, we entered into that world of Ruchnius, that unbelievable world of Ruchnius. Even to this day, you know, you don't need to. I mean, this I think is very clear, but it's so much harder to produce big time Chacham in America than it is now. I'm saying now than in Eretz Yisrael, because Eretz Yisrael is the pashtus of Eretz Yisrael then. Also, poverty and pashtus. It's very, very hard. And yeshivas nights as well. It's much the kind of the quality of the learning that comes out from it. So you can't compare to what's in America. It's a different madrega in America. But you have a kid there in fifth grade, but he knows in learning. You put him up against a 12th grader in any pashtus. There's a certain pashtus. There's a pashtus and they don't have the choices of Central Avenue and of Pico. So certain pashtus. Well, they're trying in Eretz Yisrael to do that, but it's still much more pashtus. Much more pashtus. Right. So, look at the words of Rav Kook now. Every word is Hayinu Uma Parachas Ba'avir. We were a nation that was floating in midair. We didn't have a place. We didn't have. We were parachas ba'avir, and in the avir, when you're in midair, davening is good. Avoida, so on. When you're in midair, parachas ba'avir means Rav Avner says ruchanis lechalutin, completely spiritual. Because physical stuff just was not put together. It wasn't working. Rav Kook says, V'chalamnu rak al dvar malchus shamayim. All of our dreams were not about any malchus in this world. We gave up on that. That wasn't shaykh. You're sitting someplace in Sosnovtsi, you know, in Poland. There's no dreams of malchus, you know, of an army and of an economy. The only dream you have is of surviving and Malchus Shamayim, getting to shul, davening, learning, Shabbos, Yontif. That was it. Chalamnu rak al dvar Malchus Shamayim. The dreams were about Malchus Shamayim. Al dvar ha-toiv ha-eloki ha-muchlat. About the absolute good, what it means to be a Jew. Tov ha-eloki ha-muchlat. That the only good that we have is Torah Mitzvah, Hashem is Baruch. So that was, to a large extent, our experience in Europe until the mid-19th century, but for all of the years until then, mid-19th, going into the 20th century, the experience was, Jews were dreaming about Malchus Shemayim, Zel. Malchus Shemayim. About the heavenly kingdom, not any kingdom on earth, because there was no kingdom on earth. Earth stunk and there was no kingdom on earth. The only kingdom was the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven wasn't shul. It wasn't shul and was at home. So now we're doing everything we can to try to attract the kids to Yiddishkeit. So we try to dress up and make it look exciting for them, do all kinds of things and shtick. It's very stiff competition from the world, you understand. It wasn't like that. My father always tells me that, because he was learning in yeshivas, and he went through mesechtas, and he went through shas, and when he was... So I was so amazed by that. My father said, don't be so impressed with it. My father said, all the years that he was when he was growing up in the yeshiva, he said, there was nothing else to do. So he told him. He said, what was the choice? Well, honestly, what was I going to do? What was out there? I wasn't going to go to Vienna or to Budapest. You know, I wasn't the type to run away from... I wasn't going to leave the family and go to drop everything and leave Yiddishkeit and go to the big city. It wasn't for me. So to continue on with my father's business, to have to handle all day with anti-Semites, what was the choice? He said, in the Beis Medrash, in the yeshiva, it was a nice world. That's my father always told him. He said, we didn't have all the things that... That's what my father always says. He's amazed. My father, every time he sees a yeshiva bach, he wants to kiss him. He says, you have a million choices and you want to be in yeshiva? Wow. I was like, that's amazing. He said, we didn't have choices. We didn't have we didn't get any like brochures with the University of Miami, like sitting under a palm tree with a pretty girl, you know what I mean? They didn't. There was nothing waiting for them like that. There was nothing to look forward to. So the one thing we had was we had a blood gemara. Yeah. We had a blood gemara, and we had the tzaddikim. And that was our world. And when the most exciting thing was when there was a chazan that came from out of town. He said, all of us were going crazy at this chazan. My father said there was once a world famous chazan that came, and he was and everyone was going crazy. The whole city was trying to get into the shul because of this chazan. And my father remembers that he was doing a big piece and a fly went into his mouth. And he started choking. And my father said that was the funniest thing that they ever... he remembers that as a boy, this Weltschasen started choking on a fly. Could you imagine that being like the most exciting thing that ever happened to you? But my father still says that over. Every now and then he says, he says over this mice and he starts to laugh again about the chazen, the fly went into his mouth. That's what you think of as having an exciting... It would go viral. That was the main excitement that he had back then. You know, that was the biggest thing. A chazen coming to town, and then the chazen got, busted, That was the most exciting thing that could ever happen in his life in those days. No, so my father always says so that we stayed in I stayed in yeshiva and that I was learning and that I don't see it as such a doesn't I don't look back that it was such a great accomplishment that I did that. It wasn't like there was anything else that I wanted to do or there was anywhere else to go or to be. My father said that he thought that maybe if you stay in learning that maybe you could be a dayan or you'd be a rav. And if you were dying, or if you were rough, so then there would be some, it would be a bekovedika thing, like they'd give the parents nachas and so on. But he said, I saw the way that my father was treated, and I saw the way that what was going on. So I was like, who wanted to be part of that? What was the choice? So that's Rav Kook says that we understand how Jews just were dreaming of Malchus Shemayim. Malchus Shemayim was a good place to be, because this world was not a good place, and that was a certain Kur HaBazel, the way that Egypt was necessary, Mitzrayim was necessary for us. So too, Hashem is Baruch Hu put us through Golus. Now we have to look at ourselves now and say, what has that accomplished? Where am I after all of this? Where do I stand now after all of this? That's what each person has to ask himself. What Hashem has been putting us through and all of these different Gilgulim that we've been living through as a people. So where do I stand now, myself? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. Right? We'll continue. Remember to do 130. We'll start with footnote 130 next week. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos.